Melnick in the Afternoon. Listen live weekdays from 3 to 7 on TSN 690.
Song by the Baseball Project, Volume 3. Welcome back, Melnick in the Afternoon, TSN 690. Mitch Melnick, Rod Francis, Mitch Gallo, David Trentadue's helping us out. We're with you until 7. More on the Evander Kane story and more hockey with Pierre McGuire after 5 o'clock. And, of course, this song mostly about El Duque, one of the great regrets as a baseball fan in Montreal. Even though we got LeVon Hernandez here. He's one of the best pitchers in baseball for the Montreal Expos. Omar Minaya brought El Duque in, too, but he blew out his shoulder, so we never got to see him pitch and the brothers together here in Montreal. Most of you are aware of what's going on in Cuba. And what does that mean now that Cuba and the United States are friends again? What does that mean for the future of baseball and particularly Major League Baseball and Cuba? That relationship, which has helped us as baseball fans. I mean, El Tiante, and you know how rich it is in baseball, right? Most Canadians are aware. I'm not sure, you know, if you're not a heavy-duty baseball fan, how many Americans may know? This guy knows. He is the sports editor of The Economist. He wrote about this very recently. Welcome to Melnick in the Afternoon. Dan Rosenheck, how you doing?
Good, thanks.
Thank you very much for joining us. This is a subject right up our alley. We've always been able to go to Cuba. We've always wondered about this as baseball fans, why they have to go on a leaky boat and risk their lives to fulfill their dreams of playing in the best baseball league in the world. What do you think happens now?
Well, I think this is an incremental step in a trend towards a rapprochement between the two countries and their respective baseball leagues that's been going on for a few years now. I mean, you know, 20, 30 years ago, there were no Cubans in Major League Baseball, and then you started getting a few defectors in the early 90s, and then over the past 4 years or so, it's really become a torrent, both as Cuban players have done better in the majors, which has gotten them more money, which has made more Cubans aware of how much money they can get, which means more defect, and that's just set up a cycle. So I think, in a way, the market really led the way for this opening, and now the politics is just catching up to it. And so, although I do think this will be a further opening of the floodgates, a lot of scouts say much of the best talent is already off the island and in the big leagues.
Most of it.
Well, it's really hard to say because since major league teams are not allowed to scout Cubans in Cuba, they can only scout them in international competitions, it's really hard to know how good the remaining players are. And although there have been a handful of extraordinarily high-profile successes, Yasiel Puig, Jose Fernandez, Aroldis Chapman, and the like, there's also a lot that haven't panned out. So you would expect that the players with the most to gain would have been the first ones to defect. So I'm sure there are many spectacular prospects remaining. Certainly Yoan Moncada, who's expected to be the next big contract, looks to have a very bright future. But, you know, it's a country with, I think, about 15 million people, and they've already got, what, 5 big-time Major League All-Stars? So, yes, I think there's a chance that the best players may already be here.
With Dan Rosenheck, sports editor of The Economist. Nobody, Dan, in America refers to baseball as America's national pastime anymore, right? I mean, we know it's football. I mean, that's a quaint phrase. In Cuba, that's reality, right?
Yes, it's complete religion there, and it goes back really 100-150 years. I mean, baseball evolved in parallel in the two countries, and you can argue that it's actually more tied up with Cuba's sort of patriotism and identity as a nation than America's, because when they were fighting for independence from the Spanish, baseball was became a real symbol of the independence movement as a game that was both national theirs rather than imported from Europe, and that wasn't barbaric like bullfighting. So they really see baseball as sort of a symbol of their existence as an independent nation.
Hey, Dan, what kind of effect is this gradual normalization going to have on young baseball players in Mexico, in the Dominican, in Venezuela, and in other Latino countries?
Well, I think there certainly, in one sense, it creates more competition. There's only 750 slots in Major League Baseball, so certainly if more Cubans come in, that means there's less room available for everybody else. But I don't see why players from those countries would be any more affected than players from the U.S. or Canada. You know, there are no quotas. I mean, I think this will has raised and will continue to raise the caliber of play in Major League Baseball, and I think in particular it makes the game more exciting, as so many of the Cuban players that have come into the league in recent years have been real personalities and had really unique talents. So it's clearly good for the sport and good for the league. And if the competitive bar just got a little higher for other Latin American countries, that's probably a good thing.
Yeah, there are some throwbacks who look at some of the stars that have come from Cuba, Puig most notably, and they shake their heads and they go, "These guys got to learn what it means to be a Major League Baseball player." They hot dog on the field. There's a lot of resentment, right? Until the talent just overtakes everything and shuts them up.
I think that stereotypes of Latin American baseball players, you know, go back 50 years. I mean, they were saying the same things about the Latino stars of the 60s.
Clemente.
I think that there's really certainly there are cultural differences between the countries. Certainly those differences are reflected on the baseball field. But I don't see any reason why, to the extent that American or Canadian players tend to be sort of more buttoned up on the field, why that's necessarily preferable. I think great personalities and players who, you know, really show their emotion on the field are often the ones that are most compelling to fans. And I'm certainly yet to see any evidence that their supposed demonstrativeness, to the extent that it's any different than American players, hurts their teams in any way.
Amen. We embrace that here in Montreal through the years. With Dan Rosenheck of The Economist on Melnick in the Afternoon on TSN 690, Mitch Melnick, Rod Francis, and Mitch Gallo.
So what does this mean for the Cuban players financially? Say in 5 or 10 years, that's when Puig or Chapman or Fernandez or Cespedes was coming to Major League Baseball. Are they to make less money because of this agreement between the United States and Cuba, or are they still going to be able to cash out the way those guys did when they did enter the league?
Oh, well, so it really I think within, on a 5 to 10 year time frame, something has to change in terms of the system for bringing these players into the league and assigning them to teams. Right now, Cuban veteran players are the last loophole in the system of entry to Major League Baseball. Whether it's the amateur draft or the posting system from Japan, or capped signing bonuses, signing pools for young amateur players from Latin America, the major leagues have found a way to squelch the maximum payments that teams can pay out to players. And the last exception is Cubans over the age of 23 with over 5 years in their domestic league. Those are the only guys that can still come into the league and sign to the highest bidder for whatever the market will bear. And clearly that goes against Major League Baseball's desire to promote competitive balance and to restrict salaries. So, yes, I would definitely expect that within a 5 to 10 year time frame, Ideally, MLB and the Cuban League could work out some arrangement, but that could only happen as part of a broader political rapprochement between the two countries. Otherwise, I think MLB will just impose some limits by fiat.
And finishing up, do you see the day, what, 10, 15, 20, beyond that, an actual working relationship that a Major League Baseball franchise would have a minor league team in Havana?
Well, I wouldn't rule it out, but Major League teams, you know, certainly could do that already in places like the Dominican Republic or Puerto Rico, which is an American territory, and they haven't. The
they have winter leagues.
The Mexican
there.
Summer League still has a loose minor league relationship with the U.S., so you could see something like that. But I'm not sure why, if that would happen, it would happen in Havana before, say, San Juan.
Okay, good point. Got you there. In closing, I'm curious, Dan, again, a different situation here in Canada vis-a-vis Cuba all these years. And aside from the pocket, the obvious pocket in South Florida, what has generally been the reaction to this news once Obama spilled it?
Well, I think broadly it would cleave along the exact lines that political lines that you would expect. Certainly, the more hawkish you are on foreign policy, the more you think that the U.S. is taking a soft line on evil communist dictator. there's certainly been a big trend among younger Hispanics in general, particularly younger Cuban Americans, that it sort of recognizes that the embargo hasn't achieved its goals and maybe it's time for a new policy. And I certainly think within the baseball community, there would be almost universal applauding of anything that would enable more of the top talent on what has historically been the second greatest baseball country in the world to reach the majors.
Dan Rosenheck is the sports editor of The Economist. Great stuff here. Thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Melnick in the Afternoon. Listen live weekdays from 3 to 7 on TSN 690.